gerekir. Dichtbij, links erbij. Het is probleem dat ze weg.
Hallo, dat werkt? Deze op? Oké, ja, should be working.
You should be eating it, this semester.
Nice in yellow, like a lemon. Hello, can everybody sit down?
Thank you.
Who here does not understand any Dutch? Well, that's a lot. Verstaat er iemand geen Engels? I'll do it in English. Maybe later in Dutch as well. Welcome, everyone. This is another year where the Dutch pro community managed to have another pro workshop. This time it's the same format as last year. We have one track, one track mind. And yeah, except we have a different space, we have a different price. We're cheaper. feel welcome. We have a program for the entire day. If you're looking for the toilet, it's behind the registration desk. If you want any drinks, you can buy them at the bar. There's also a donation jar for this wonderful space here, which has been provided for us. And yeah, there's probably something more I should mention, but I'll probably do it later. The first two talks are about Pro 6, and Jonathan will start the first one. There you go.
Thank you. So, goedemorgen. It's great to be back here in the Netherlands, and it's always a great welcome at this conference. This is probably my fourth time here, so it's very nice to be back. Today I'd like to give a talk about some of the work Nadai and others are doing on Recudo. So is there anyone here who hasn't heard of Recudo? Okay, so Recudo is a Perl 6 compiler. It's one that I've been hacking on for a while with plenty of other people. And when I last was here, we were talking about Recudo Star. This is a release that we were sort of working towards about a year ago, and we made it. We released Recudo Star last summer. It shipped with the compiler, a bunch of modules, and a book. In some state of completeness, but it was a good guide for getting started. There was a lot of stuff that we were kind of happy about. It gave people a feel to sort of explore the power and beauty, I guess, of the Perl 6 language. So people were able to take it and say, oh, we can make something cool with this. And since the release of Recudo Star, people have built some really quite cute stuff. It covered a wide range of features. So a lot of the things that had been promised in Perl 6 from the early days, particularly the really cool stuff like grammars and multiple dispatch, but also the new object model, lazy lists, roles, meta operators, all of these things were in there and available to play with. So it did pretty well on giving you a good feel for a lot of the features in there. the process of actually building the compiler up to this level also led to a lot of the really weird areas of the specification getting sorted out. So there were various cases, especially things like lazy lists, where the semantics really had some issues when you implemented them and the spec needed some sort of hammering out. And the desire to ship something that people could use and that we wouldn't sort of break their code too much in the future sort of led to a push to try and resolve some of those issues. And importantly, and perhaps critically, the release attracted a bunch more people to the Perl 6 community. So we definitely got some kind of growth after the Rakuta Star release. So that's the good news. The bad news is that, of course, there were plenty of weaknesses as well. This was not a sort of 6.0 release. It was sort of a step on the journey. The one that most people notice is that things run slowly, sometimes glacially. And sort of coupled with that is that the memory usage was often kind of high. We've made some steps on those since the initial Rakuto Star release, but things are still kind of slow. Yes.
Okay.
High score. There's various places where we also give some kind of unhelpful messages and failure modes. So when things go wrong, we have this thing in Perl 6 where if an error is not really as good as it should be, we say it's less than awesome. And we need to awesomize it. So there's a bunch of places where we really should be doing better on that. To be fair, we actually did reasonably well in various areas. There was a bunch of stuff in the grammar where it detected things like, oh, it looks like you accidentally fed Perl 5 code to the Perl 6 compiler and actually told you that. So we didn't do too badly on that. But there's a long way to go to sort of getting better. And it's one of those things that you never reach perfect on, I guess. We were also kind of weak in the areas of language extensibility. Now, this is only so important in some senses for what Rakuta Star was aiming to do, which is give people a feel for the Perl 6 language. But of course, a language that wants to live for a long time needs to be able to evolve. Perl 5 has been very good at that so far. It continues to evolve. And in Perl 6, there's a sort of a goal that the language itself will be quite hackable. So going back to speed, the sort of goal is make it work, then make it fast, not premature optimization. I'm kind of glad that we didn't do one implementation of things and then make them fast, because to be honest, a few things needed a few tries to get them correct, and a few things actually needed many tries to get them correct. Guess how many implementations of parametric roles I've written so far? No, don't. Often, though, the quick way to get a feature in with the correct semantics isn't really the one that's going to be fast at runtime. You can sort of write a correct implementation. You can write a fast one that gets everything wrong. And then being in that space where they overlap is actually often quite tricky. And we kind of didn't want to waste time making the wrong thing fast before we had some confidence that the sort of semantics were sort of correct. But the focus is changing now. We're actually at the point where there's a lot of stuff in Rakuto and it's pretty stable. We have some pretty good test coverage. There's tens of thousands of tests that we run. And the main blocker for people picking up and using Rakuto is no longer features. We don't hear that much on the channel these days, oh, this feature isn't implemented, so I won't use it. We hear, it's too slow, so I won't use it. So the focus now is actually undergoing sort of a big change. Now we're sort of looking at, what do we need to do to get people to adopt it? And time again, we hear it's basically speed. So the things in Rakuto today, there's places in the compiler you can look, and it just makes you say, huh, dope. So we need to make Rakuto smarter. We need to do more analysis on the code we're compiling. And we also need to be more aware of the context of the compilation. What do I mean by this? Well, in a sort of more traditional view of compiling a program, you have your compile time and you have runtime, and they're very separated. The Perl view of things is much more in that you have compile time and runtime, but you sort of leak between them now and then, and the boundary is kind of fuzzy anyway. To sort of give you an example, one of the things that you can do in Perl 6 is write, say, begin blocks, just like in Perl 5, which give you a little bit of runtime at compile time. Stepping up a stage of sort of difficulty in a way, you can also actually customize the way the object model works. Now, if you want to compile object-oriented programs efficiently, you need to actually cooperate with the object model. That means that even if people have defined their own way in that the object model works, we need to be able to work with that model at compile time as well as runtime to sort of help get assistance from it to compile the program well. So what I'd like to do with the rest of my time is just go through a few of the things that we're working on where Recudo really could do better. And what I hope you'll realize is that actually we're at a stage where there's a lot of things we can do to sort of address performance issues. And these are not things that are mind-blowingly clever optimizations. There's plenty of room for those later. These are things that you can look at and say, oh yeah, I sort of understand that. So one of the things that we kind of make a mess of at the moment is constants. One of the things to realize first is that constants sort of come in two forms. You have just sort of the native value, which is actually a CPU level integer. But if you go and stick it in some arbitrary variable, then it needs to be turned into some kind of boxed object, some kind of thing we can go and stick in a scalar. And when we have a constant like 42 and we need to do that, we at the moment just actually construct and box 42 up each time we need to use it. That's kind of wasteful, because what we do is we end up often making loads and loads of constants that we then throw away. We also don't get to share memory lots with them as well. So if you make an array and you initialize it with zeros for 10,000 elements, you'll actually end up with 10,000 objects. This is bad. So one of the big things that's going to happen is we'll actually build a compile time constants table and just reference them. So having talked about those objects, how many garbage collectible objects should a boxed integer be? Any opinions? One. Today it's free. Why? Okay, how can I explain this? Well, basically, inside of the parent virtual machine, it provides a bunch of base types. It calls them PMCs. And if you end up inheriting from one, because it's from sort of a different object space, the model is actually more like delegation. So what we end up with today is that we have the Recudo sort of high-level int object, which has an attribute store, which in turn contains a parent integer PMC, and they're all garbage collectible. Ouch. This is not really good for memory, and it's definitely not good for garbage collection churn as well, because when one of these goes away, there's free objects for it to collect and free the memory from. So the answer, of course, is we should just have one object. And a bunch of the work I've been doing of late is actually to make it so we can do that. So we can have one object with a native integer inlined into it literally, and that's all we'll have. It'll just work. The other part of this work that I haven't got mentioned anywhere here is that you can then go and write your own classes, which will use just native integer slots as well. So this will all be available from user space. In a dynamic language, you often find yourself having to do some type checks. You often have to check, you know, is this type what we expected it to be at this point, because we couldn't figure out at compile time. Or when we're doing, say, a multiple dispatch, we have to sort of check, you know, okay, is this, does this argument match this candidate that we maybe can dispatch to? Today, doing that can be pretty slow. It can actually involve doing a method call. Now, for a relatively common operation, that's actually a pretty high cost. I've actually got an implementation now where this boils down to just a few pointer comparisons in the common case. So this is going to be an awful lot faster. So as you can see, a lot of the things that I mentioned so far are just sort of cases where we take common things that every program does, and we say, okay, how do we actually make this as fast as it really should be? Can anyone spot the typo in this code? We really should be able to detect these kinds of errors at compile time. So when we're compiling your program, we should be able to say, oh, you declared an attribute called T and player, but you didn't declare an attribute called P. So, you know, this typo should actually be something that you get told about really early on. We don't actually do that today. So this ends up being a runtime error at the moment. This is something that we could tell you about at runtime. Compile time, sorry. Now, why this gets interesting is because it plays back into what I said earlier, that actually, when I write the keyword class here, I'm actually specifying that I want to declare an object that works in a certain way. But of course, because Perl 6 is extensible, people might come up with their own package types and add them to the language as well. Alternatively, they might just decide, oh, actually, I'm going to replace what a class means with my own implementation of classes, or my own derived implementation of classes, which is maybe customized. So, for example, you might decide that actually you'll have an implementation of classes that just works like the normal one, apart from it logs every single method call. So, if you wanted to do stuff like that, the compiler still needs to work with whatever your implementation of classes is and the way it stores attributes. And it might actually know what its attribute list is in a completely different way. So this is one of the reasons this is actually not quite so trivial as just maintaining lists of sort of what we've seen and so forth. One of the other things we can do, and that we don't at the moment, is that we can actually map attributes to slot indexes at compile time. So at the moment, when you do an attribute access, we actually go and look up the name of the attribute in a hash table and hand back the value. That's not too bad, because hashes are relatively, they're sort of order one to look up in, and you know, you can get a pretty fast hash implementation. But really, we'd kind of like to be able to just give them indexes as we compile the program, emit code which looks the attribute up by index, and then all we have to do to get an attribute is follow some pointers. So a lot of this is about doing things that we would do by name, but doing it just by pointer follows, by indexing, and so forth. One of the other issues we get into is just generally too many allocations. So when you have a program running, it tends to make either one of two types of allocation. It can allocate something on the stack, which is just sort of a chunk of memory which is sort of pointed to as sort of this is where you are at the moment. Alternatively, it can allocate things on the heap. And heap allocation is generally somewhat slower, and the heap is something that gets kind of fragmented and needs more management. And anything that you actually allocate on the heap in a Perl 6 program is then going to be looked at by the garbage collector. So what we really want to do is try and keep our heap allocations down. We do a lot of them at the moment, and we do a bunch of them in places where you would intuitively feel that you shouldn't have to do any. Because, you know, if you're just asking a question about something that's already there, your sort of intuition is that shouldn't have to allocate any storage just to ask the question. Two places that are especially bad at the moment, in terms of they cause an allocation when you would rather they didn't, is the multiple dispatch cache lookup. So when you call a multi-sub and you want to know where it's going to dispatch to, we have a cache. At the moment, you end up doing an allocation to look in that cache. We should fix that. And also method lookups at the moment. When you do a method lookup, because of the way that delegation is implemented, so you can actually walk up the class hierarchy in your methods, we actually do an allocation there as well. We need to stop doing those because, for one, it takes time, but for two, it also causes the garbage collector to have to get rid of these objects, which actually have really, really short lifetimes. So that's a bunch of things that are kind of more like dough, but this one is a little bit less so. This one is a case where we really want to sort of make use of more information that the user gives us. So in Perl 6, you can optionally add type annotations to your program. So in this case, I've declared there that I have a variable of type int, and I've tried to assign 4.2 to it. Will this ever work? No, It can't, because 4.2 is a rational number. It's not an integer. So we should really complain about this at compile time. That's actually one of those things that looks easy to do, but isn't quite as easy as you might first think. It actually ties in to the fact that when I said, remember I said earlier about the constants table we need to build at compile time? Well, we also need to build the constants at compile time. Once we do this, actually this check becomes just as easy as if we were doing it at runtime. So we should really be able to complain about these things pretty early. We shouldn't let people run programs that have no possible way of working at runtime when it is, in fact, relatively easy to be able to tell them at compile time, hey, you've done something that could never actually work. One other place that we'd really like to be able to use type information, and I admit this one is trickier to actually get right, is in multiple dispatch. So here I have two multi-subs called foo, and the first one wants to be called when you pass an int, and the next one wants to be called when you pass a num. Now, in this bit of code, we know what is in the variable $x. We know it's an int. So if we know all of the multi-candidates, which we do in any given lexical scope, we actually know at compile time, that's part of the Perl 6 specification, then we can actually decide which of these things we're going to call straight off at compile time. We don't have to go and make a runtime decision about what we're going to call. Now, you might think, oh, but I probably won't write that many multi-subs. Will this really help me? The answer is yes, because actually all of the built-in operators are multiple dispatch. Operator overloading in Perl 6 is just adding another multi-dispatch candidate. So the entire operator system involves doing this. Once we can actually optimize this, then every time you do things like a plus or a minus or a division or a string concatenation, we can actually make a decision much earlier about what's going to happen. Now, this is kind of useful in another way, in that it's a prerequisite for a technique that we call inlining. So where we really want to get up to is that, yes, conceptually, when you add two things together, we do a multiple dispatch to the add operator with two integer objects. What we want, though, is that actually what really happens is we just take those two and do a low-level addition on them. So it's fast. That's a technique called inlining. But actually knowing what code you're going to call statically is a prerequisite for implementing that kind of thing. Another place that we can do it is by building something called vtables. So to understand these, we need to just think about how you do a method dispatch. Yeah, I like straw waffles. So when you when we want to call a new method here, now the thing to realize is that every single object has a new method. Every object in Perl 6 is derived from a class called moo, which is the top type. And that's subclassed by any, and you normally inherit from that. But in the sort of top class that everything inherits from, there's a new method. Now, what we would tend to do when we're doing a method dispatch normally in a dynamic language is we would say, oh, I want to call a method called new, and we'd go and look it up in the hash table. But what we actually could do is we could say, well, we know that everything derives from this mu object. So what we should do really is map all of the names at compile time to sort of an index. And then we can just emit code which says, oh, look up the method in slot 2 and call it. So we actually take away from all of these method dispatches a named lookup. So it's just like an array lookup rather than a hash one. Now, you might think that's great just for some built-in ones like new, but does this apply more widely? And the answer is yes, it does. In fact, the way this really works is that when you put more type information into your program, that actually lets the compiler know, this is definitely the type of object that the method is going to be called on. It can then go and look at the type you're calling the method on and say, oh, by the way, do you actually know how to resolve this method name to this slot index? And it might say, yes, here's the index, and then the compiler can generate some better code. So what we're seeing here is we actually have this sort of bit of interoperation between the compiler and the way that classes are implemented. And this is actually a principle called gradual typing. Gradual typing says that you can take a completely dynamic program, which you've just hacked up, decide that it needs to be either a bit stricter or a bit more optimal, and you can start putting some type information in it, and the compiler then gives you incremental benefits as you start to add more information and tell it more. So this is kind of nice. You can actually start off completely dynamic and with the same code work to something much more statically typed if you want to do that, and sort of get some wins on robustness and on performance. Right, if you add a method on the fly, then what will happen is it will have no way to actually compile that call to an index. So it will just fall back to a named lookup. So it doesn't remove any of the dynamism. It just says, when we can be more optimal, we will be. When we can't be, we'll just fall back to doing it just by our named lookup. Right, so this is kind of interesting. So the way that the object model implementation actually views the world is that you have the meta object itself contains an authoritative version of all of the methods and the way they can be dispatched. The V table that I just discussed is actually considered a bit like a cache. And if you actually need to do an update, so if you add a method, then what will actually happen is it'll cause an event to be propagated, and things that then gain a new method will be able to say, oh, I need to go and update my table now. So yeah, it works like a cache, and you have to keep it consistent, pretty much. That's actually a pretty interesting way of looking at things, because a lot of statically typed languages, you know, this thing never changes. So what we're trying to do is sort of steal some of the bits that the static guys have for performance, but still keep our dynamism. And I didn't start off actually looking at vtables as caches, and then after a while I realized, well, actually, they kind of are. It's just a sort of faster way to get the same information out. And I sort of derived from that this sort of idea that the sort of meta object is authoritative, and it can just produce extra views and then keep them up to date. So that's sort of the underlying model there. One thing you might wonder, by the way, is what if I wanted to create a Perl 6 module that told people about methods that were unknown at compile time? You could actually go and write that based on this as well. We're not going to do that by default, of course, but it would actually be something that you could build. And it would be relatively little hassle to build it, which is kind of nice. Here's another one. This one is back to the dumb stuff again. So if you think about lexical variables and you think about how to implement looking them up, well, one way you could do it is to start off and say, okay, we're in this current scope, and a scope tends to be delimited by the curlies. And you can just say, well, we'll go and look down each one until we find one with a name that matches. Now, we actually do at compile time detect all of the missing ones. The thing is that we also at compile time know statically, oh, actually this lexical lives two scopes down. So you don't need to do two named lookups on the way. You can just go and follow two pointers and then do a lookup. The other thing we could do, though, because we know all of these at compile time, is we could just say, well, we'll put them in slots and we'll do lookups by slots as well. So we can actually optimize all our lexical lookups to not be by name anymore. We can do them all just by index. And then we'll just keep a table somewhere saying, oh, if you need to do a named lookup, which we can do because it's very dynamic, then we'll have to go and just sort of look at this table to get the index. One question you might ask is, what if I do an eval? This is where things get really, really interesting, because this is where the compiler, remember I said the compiler should know about the context it's being compiled in? This is one of those points where we'd like the compiler to be able to say, oh, Actually, I see that I'm being compiled with this outer scope, so I know that that lexical variable exists just a few slots down. Finally, leaky extensions. This is sort of pushing on to the idea of language tweaks. In Perl 6, we have a principle that you shouldn't just have random extensions to the language. You should always be able to look at a given lexical scope and know exactly what language is being passed and run inside that scope. So if you do language tweaks, then you know they always get imported. They always have to be imported into the current scope, where a use statement, for example. And in this case, we're actually just adding a new operator here. We're adding a postfix exclamation mark for factorial. Now, what it should do, because we've only added this inside this block, so subs are lexically scoped in Perl 6 by default, is, you know, this should actually be a parse error, because this bit of syntax, this operator, doesn't exist outside of this block. So if you'd actually, in this block, said, you know, suppose this was in a module, and inside this block you said, you know, use factorial operator, or whatever we call the module, then you would expect that module not to have any effect in the outer language, the language outside of this scope. At the moment, those things leak all over the place. And one of the things that we've been working on is actually preparing to be able to do a bunch of these language extensions in a much more tightly scoped way. It actually boils down to being able to do mix-ins to grammar objects. So, yeah, this is that's a contrived example, but actually for the sort of future of Perl 6, where we consider that, you know, in 5 or 10 years' time, people are saying, oh, let's start extending it in various ways. We really want to keep it very sane as to knowing when you are working with an extended version and when you're just working with the language itself as it originally came. By the way, some of that work is actually partly opening the door to implementing macros as well, which will make some people happy. So, and the list goes on. This is just some of the things that we're sort of looking at and working on at the moment. And there's lots that we can do just to make all of these common cases faster, essentially because we're optimizing sort of building blocks that all programs use. And later on, once we actually get these done, of course, there's still going to be a whole shed load of optimizations which are much more smart and much more clever that we can start building in. So that we can sort of have our cake of dynamism and then eat it statically as well. Thank you, Val. I'm happy to take any questions. Please. Do we have a profiler? There is a some profiling support in Parrot. It's tricky. It has given some results, but it doesn't yet map the results back to the high-level language code. It only maps them back to the compiled intermediate language code, which means it's quite a bit of effort to work back from it. One of the other exercises that did prove very interesting from a profiling point of view is that when I was working on prototyping out the new meta model, I actually did it on top of the .NET CLR. And built a sort of small port of the NQP language, which we used to bootstrap Perl 6, Rakuto compiler on top of. Now, what was interesting when I did that is I could actually use a bunch of really good profiling tools over there and start to understand the cost model in ways that I kind of hadn't before. Even though it was running on a different VM, you could start to see, oh, actually, things like binding are quite a big cost sometimes. And actually, that has fed directly back into improvements on the sort of Perl 6 on Parrot effort as well. But yeah, profiling is definitely something we need to do better on in the sort of Parrot and Rakuto world. Any more? Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Our next speaker is Martin Behrens. He will talk about 6 model. I believe he will do it in Dutch or...
Yeah, changing to Perlduino.
Oh, that's cool. yeah, the program is being printed, so it will be available shortly. And well, if they're not not enough, then we can print more. So, if you're giving a talk and you have a chance of testing the projector in advance, please do so. Then we can continue quite quickly. Thank you.